Hey everybody, it's Norm Farrar, aka the Beard Guy here, a late Beard Guy here. Sorry everyone, I just got off a call and I'm late for my own podcast. How's that? Well, welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the rise of the micro brands. Lunch with Norm. All right. So today I am joined with a good friend of mine, Christy Verdi. Christy and I gone back a few years. I think we met at an ASM conference or an event that we were both speaking at. Anyways, she's incredible. She's co-founder of and CEO of Real Coaching for e-commerce sellers. And we're going to be talking about something a little bit different today. And that's about running your business like a business, like a CEO. And so we're going to be diving a little bit deeper into that. But before we get into that, I just wanted to let everybody know that we are broadcasting live on YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you, let's see if Kelsey's here, first of all.
I am here. Hello.
Were you the reason I was late?
I was not, actually.
I really want to blame you for that.
Yeah, I know you do.
No?
But unfortunately not. That was
all me, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do we got to do?
All right. You know the drill, everyone. Like this video, share it out to your friends. We are almost at 1,000 followers on the Facebook page. So maybe if you can think of one of your e-commerce friends or Amazon friends who might be interested in the podcast, send them on over to us. And yeah, hopefully to hit that, we're looking to hit that 1,000. It's going to be great. And we do have our brand new Facebook group right here, scrolling across, Lunch with Norm, Amazon FBA, and E-Commerce Collective. You can find all of the content we do here on YouTube. You can search Norman Farrar. Everything is uploaded straight there. It's even streaming there. So we probably have Nathan and Simon joining us. Oh, and we look like we have Mark on YouTube. Hello, Mark.
Hey, and, guys. Hi, Mark. You said yep. Nathan and Nathan, I guess he's on YouTube as well.
They're not here yet.
Okay.
Yet, but I'm guessing they might be.
All right.
But yeah, we have all the long episode, the full episodes go straight there, and the short clips uploaded daily. And let's see, we do have a special giveaway today. So stick around. Who knows? You might have to answer a question. You might, we don't know, but it's a surprise giveaway.
And that's your job. You have to figure that out while I'm talking.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yeah. I'll start jotting things down. All right, look, it's Simon. Hi, Simon. How's it
going? Oh, he is back. All right.
Wet and windy UK. Nice. Okay. All right. So, yeah, that's it for me.
And, okay. Well, get off the screen. See, he listens at least. Anyways, okay. So, I'm just waiting actually for Kelsey to come back with some little comment, but I shouldn't be like that with him. He works so hard for the podcast. Oh, there he is. I was just going to say, I was giving you a compliment that you work so hard for the podcast. It's great. But anyways, hey, look, if you have any questions, just throw them over to the comment side and we'll get back to you. I see that Victor joined too. Hey, thanks, Victor. Good to see you back. And now sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the show. So there she is. Hi, Christy. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You're in Montreal.
I am. Bonjour.
Yeah. Comment ça va, whatever that is. There we go. That's what I meant to say. You know, I lived in Montreal for a year. I was actually brought up in my younger days in Montreal. Then I moved back there and I still can't speak French.
Well, I've been here for 4 years and I can't speak it either. So,
but Montreal is one of those cities you can just grow up in and you don't really, if you get to Quebec City, it's a whole different story. But
actually, Anna Maria Dinu has just popped up and she lives in Quebec City. So that's quite funny.
Oh, yeah. Quebec City, I love Montreal. I hope to live there again. Hayden just moved out there, my other son. But yeah. I love Quebec. I love Quebec City. It's the most gorgeous city, I think, in all of North America. I think. Yeah. but I'm sure there'll be arguments about that. Anyways, why don't we tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around for a while, so I don't know how you want me to go back. But yeah, I mean, probably as you can tell by my accent, I'm actually a British. So I was actually born and bred in Yorkshire in England. I saw a couple of people here from the UK. I just grew up, a lot of British will probably know that there's a lot of Australian shows in England, right? And so when I was growing up as a kid, there were all these like Aussie shows on and The Sunshine was always there. And so that's one thing that I really wanted to do was to move to Australia. So I went there, traveled around there for a bit, and I was like, I'm going back there. And in the meantime, I kind of had a career where I was, you know, in marketing. I was working on brands. So I used to work on brands like Pedigree, you know, Pedigree for dogs, Whiskers for cats, Durex condoms, you know, kind of array of different brands for different people doing different things. But I needed to get to Australia before the visa ran out. So I was like, okay, I better get there. And that's kind of what I did. So off I popped to Australia, and that's where I really got my travel bug. I really enjoyed traveling. Went around Asia for a few months, about 6 months. Landed in Australia, traveled around Australia in a camper van, and then settled there. So I was there for like 14 years. And then I was still in my corporate career. I worked on things from analgesics, so painkillers, through to oral health, right? So you might have heard of like Sensodyne toothpaste and McLean's Aquafresh toothpaste, all that stuff. But I literally kind of got to a stage where I enjoyed the kind of marketing of it. I really enjoyed the brand building. I really enjoyed that process. I enjoyed the cut and thrust of, you know, going from zero to, you know, in those, because I had a lot of budget, right? Because I worked for a big company. So I could spend like $20 million in a campaign because it wasn't my money. So I enjoyed all that process, but not all the kind of, I call it the corporate BS, right? The corporate crap that comes with it. And I just got to this point where I was like, am I actually going to do this until I'm 60? Is that really what I'm going to do? I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. So then I just started to think about, well, what could I do that could really, number one, get me out of what I was doing, in terms of, as you go up the ladder, basically what you're doing is trying to please different people, and everybody's agendas are different. And so you feel compromised. I felt compromised. And my one big thing throughout my career was, you're a square peg in a round hole. That's, you know, you're really good at all this stuff, but you just kind of don't fit in this world. And so I thought, well, how do I just take that and kind of find something that's going to give me the passion back in terms of what I actually wanted to do, and then also give me the lifestyle that I wanted? Because a key, when I was thinking about this, it wasn't necessarily just about the money. It was about, how much do I need to live on to achieve a lifestyle that I want to achieve? And for me, that was being able to travel where I wanted, do what I wanted, when I wanted. It sounds pretty like idyllic, right? It sounds like utopia. But it wasn't the money. It wasn't like I needed $1 million or anything like that. It was just, what's going to give me enough to achieve that goal? And so that's kind of how I started. That's where I started to think about, what could I do that was going to do that.
Yeah, you know, when you were explaining that, one of the things that just, you know, popped into my head is, yeah, you could set these goals and you can live that lifestyle, but it's all about this topic that we're talking about today. And that's, you've got to be able to run your business like a CEO. And, you know, this kind of just goes right into the first question. So what are some of the lessons that you learned from moving from the corporate world to being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think the first lesson was, in terms of how I felt, was like, I'm jumping off a cliff, but realizing that I've got wings, right? But I didn't realize I had the wings before I jumped off the cliff, if that makes sense. So are you still there, by the way? Because I can only see me on the screen. There you go. The first lesson was, you just have to do it, I think, right? So I'm just, it's that kind of dichotomy between, do I need to get enough? Do I need to really replace everything that I had here to then make the leap? And I think if you think like that, you're really trying to replace a job that you've already got with a job that you're going to have in the future, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of change that mindset. You have to really dig deep on, okay, what is actually the thing that's going to drive me to achieve the goal, as opposed to, I just want enough money to replace my salary. which they might sound like the same thing, but they're not, because intrinsically you've got something else inside you that's more than the money. And so if you can tap into that first, that is the thing that's going to get you through the hard times. Because when you're in a job, in a career, whatever, yeah, things might annoy you. Think people might annoy you. Processes might annoy you, whatever that is. But you've still got that kindness. It's not really real. We feel like it's real. It's a safety net there because you've got a job and you get a salary every month. And when you're on your own, it's you. You're the one that's creating the opportunities. You're the one that's creating the cash flow. You're the one that's creating all that stuff, right? So you have to have something deeper that's going to drive you to find a solution. And that's the key thing. When you think like a CEO, it's not that every hurdle is a stop, right? Every hurdle is, okay, this is a problem. How do I fix the problem? And I think that's how you have to approach a business, not, okay, this is too hard, I'm done, right? So number one is, there's always have that in the back of your mind. You need a really deep why you're doing it. And number two, every problem can be overcome.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. And especially when you were talking about what it is that you're trying to achieve. Because it's easy for somebody to sit down there and say, I want to work 2 hours a day. I wish. And, you know, I want to make, you know, $500,000 a year. So right off the bat, we talk about it like, I know Victor's heard me say this a million times, but, you know, I hate the Lamborghini flashing money, get rich quick. You've got to lay it out properly. And sometimes that's sacrifice, and sometimes it doesn't work out. What you were just talking about with risk and stress, look, every entrepreneur is going to have it. The way that you handle risk and stress is completely different. Everybody's a different individual. But I can tell you, because I'm just an old guy, that the stuff that I would have sleepless nights about 25 years ago and what would just bounce off my shoulders now, I mean, it's nothing. I mean, I don't even know what type of stress I'd have to come up to make me not get a good night's sleep. Because, you know, you just handle it. But Amazon can throw you some curveballs. The world can throw you some curveballs. COVID. But you got to just get through it. I think everybody that's come on to at least the other podcasts, I know this guy, they always have one common denominator, and that's resilience.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you're looking at that. Now, if you give us 2 points, if you think back to your corporate world, what would you do differently?
In the corporate world or business? In the corporate world, I wouldn't do anything different, to be honest. I mean, I had some rough times. I had some stressful times, but I learned a hell of a lot. Would I have got out earlier? Probably not. It was just the right time, I think. And what I did was I took all the processes that I learned within that corporate environment, i.e. what you just kind of talked, you know, you touched on there. So it's essentially, number one is you have a goal, right? So, you know, you want to work 2 hours a week or you want to earn X amount of money, right? And then what you want to do then is work back from that goal. And this is what we do in corporate day in and day out, is there's goals all the time, right? Could be 10 years. That's like a really long-term goal. But that's more like a vision, right? The vision is in 10 years time, I want to be doing this, but it's so far out that it's difficult to grasp it. It's difficult to be able to put a plan against that, right? But it's a vision. It's something that you're aiming for. And then a more kind of attainable goal would be in 3 years, what do you want to be doing? And then more attainable than that is the next 12 months. So that's really what I like to work on, is the vision, you know, give yourself that oomph, that why, and then the next 12 months, what exactly am I going to do in the next 12 months to hit the 12-month goal? And we call that a SMART goal, setting a SMART goal. And essentially what that means is it's just an acronym. So number one is specific. It's got to be specific. It's not, I want $1 million in the bank, right? Because that's not really a goal. That's just kind of a wish, right? So it's like, it's got to be specific. It's also got to be measurable. So there's got to be kind of a date, times, money behind it, right? So measurable. It's also got to be attainable. So not too far out that it feels like so ridiculous. but just within reach, but you still don't know how to do it yet, right? So attainable. It's got to be relevant. So there's got to be some kind of relevance to you. Do you really want to do it? Because if you're not intrinsically like kind of linked to it, then you're not going to achieve it, or it's going to be hard work, right? And then T is timely. So you've got to put it's got to be time bound. There's got to be a date on it. It's got to be, you know, specific and date. So as an example, say you want to earn, you want to get, I don't know, $5,000 income per month from your business in 12 months, right? And that's the key thing, is always start with the income first. Because if you start just with the monetary, I want to do $50,000 on Amazon, or I want to do $100,000 a month on Amazon, that's only one part of the goal, because you can drive $100,000 very easily on Amazon by spending a lot of money. But it doesn't mean to say you're actually going to make any money, right? If you're just focused on a top line goal. So I always start first with how much money I need to make to achieve the lifestyle that I want to achieve. So say $5,000 income per month. And then you work backwards from core metrics around that. So say a really good business is operating at 20% net profit, and that's after everything. You know, this is just not the profitability in product. It's after expenses, advertising, all that other stuff. And then I'm thinking, okay, good. So I need to know what profit I need to make to hit the income goal. And the other key thing that I like to work on roughly is just, if I make so much profit, I'm not going to take all that out as income, because I need to grow the business, right? I need to expand this business. So just as a rough rule of thumb, just take half of the profit for yourself and then half put it back into the business, right? And it's not very scientific. It's just, let's just use that as a rule of thumb. So therefore, I need to make $10,000 profit, because I'm going to take five for myself. I'm going to give five back. And then I'm going to make 20% in the business. So if it's a 20% net profit, you literally just do the math and go, well, what do I need to do every month in top line sales to achieve that goal, right? So let's just do the math, 20% of that, or if you add, you know, 80% is you need to do at least $50,000 per month in sales, 20% net profit, five in your pocket, five back in the business. And so it gives you those rough numbers to work to. And then when you're doing all your product research and all your profitability research and before you even start the business or before you even launch a product, you can make sure that the product is going to hit those income goals. So to get to that, you know, $10,000 profit, you might need five products that are going to deliver that goal, right? And you can literally look for those products, and then you can put it into a forecast, a plan for the next 12 months. So you know exactly, yeah, I'm going to launch this product. I'm going to launch this product then. I'm going to launch this product then. And it literally is just building up the numbers in a spreadsheet to show you when it is potentially you're going to hit that goal. Now, a lot of people, when I talk about this, if they've never done it before, they might think, yeah, it's just guessing, right? How do I know? How do I know it's going to hit that? But the point is, there's so many tools out there that allow you to see the potential, the market opportunity. And then you just need to really understand the math in your products to make sure that once, you know, you can have a look at even your cost per clicks and things like that around the keywords that you're going to launch the products with, to get an idea of, after, you know, advertising, the typical conversion rates around that, what it could be once you've, you know, launched the product and you've got your product running. And there's ways to do that. I'm not a mathematician by any means. I'm more of a creative person. But this is the kind of process that I learned in my corporate career that I just automatically applied to my business and just thought that everybody did that, right? And it's literally called forecasting, planning. And then what you do is you literally build an action plan to get you to that goal, right? And I like to break that down into quarters, not just the full 12 months. I can have like a top line plan. I'm going to launch this product here, this product here, this product here. But then I'll say, what do I need to do in the next 90 days to enable me to hit all those things that I've put into the forecast? So I know there's a lot there, but the key elements are, number one, know what your goal is, know the math behind a typical good business, and then reverse engineer the products that you want to sell to hit the goal before you spend any money on anything else. And so the planning phase is very important to then be more successful when you're actually actioning the plan, because when you come against those hurdles or those, you know, those roadblocks that we talked about, you can move around them because you know what you said you were going to do. And if the certain thing doesn't come off, you know why it didn't actually work. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And there's a couple of things I'd like to add. And this is anything in business, including, hey, look, are you going to sell your business? Is it going to be a legacy for your kids? Creating that exit strategy. So if you do want to sell it, you know, figuring that out. Well, I do that from the very beginning, and then I kind of work it back because I want to know, you know, write it just like a script writer. How is the story going to end for me?
Yeah.
Right. And then, like you said, I work all those details like you were talking about. It even goes even further. And I think you'd agree that there's a lot of hidden costs. And you might just go, PayPal charges, foreign exchange rates. Oh, I might overlook HTS codes. You have to trap everything. And if you don't put those numbers in, garbage out.
Yeah. And people, and it's a good point you bring up those little costs. And sometimes you don't understand that until you've had the experience as well, right? But if you don't understand, number one, say you've launched it, you don't have all those costs in up front. But if you're tracking your costs along the way, you're going to know, oh, I didn't hit that profit margin because I had this cost chucked in, I had that cost chucked in. And so you just adjust based on that, but at least you know where it came from. And I think that's the core point, is if you just go out there and go, I really love this product and I think that everybody's going to love it and I'm just going to put it on Amazon. And then you spend, I've worked with people that have done things like this where they'll easily spend $20,000 on something that they've done no research on or don't understand how it's even going to get them to where they want to be, because they don't know where they're going, but they love the idea of it. Well, that you might as well just set fire to the $20,000, right? You know, because it's not, you're not thinking, and I'm not saying this is anybody's fault. It's just, if you've not had that background or you haven't had that opportunity yet to understand that, it's difficult to make those numbers work without knowing the numbers, right?
You know, okay, so remind me about soap, but knowing your numbers, Tim Francis was on, Vinny was on the other day, but Tim Francis has a course called Know Your Numbers as well. I've got my whole team taking that. So each company, the senior management is taking the course because they have to know their number. Even if they do, just get a refresher to understand those numbers. Now, he's not getting into deep accounting. He's just getting into understanding numbers, the process. And anyways, I just wanted to let you, like everybody know that, I do not take affiliates, but check it out over at, Kelsey, help me out here. It was I think it was just knowyournumbers.com, wasn't it? Or
it was a little different. I'll put it in the comment section.
Okay.
You can also find it on the Facebook group.
I'm just letting everybody, we're taking this as well. I've gone through courses like that. I am not an accountant, but I do know my numbers. And that's important. The other part to this too, that you might even want to, like, I made this mistake and I'll tell you about my soap. So I went and I know e-com. I've been doing it since the 90s. And I thought, I jumped in to what I saw. I found this great factory that were a manufacturer for soap, got it onto the market, thought, oh, and I bought 72 different scents. So first of all, inventory was stupid. Then what I did is, how much soap can you sell? It's $10, and that's maximizing. If I got $11 or $12, was I going to get any sales? Even though it was packaged nice, but it was $4.65, and I didn't realize that when I jumped into the market. So Amazon was $4.65, plus my cost of goods, plus, and it ended up, I had to sell thousands of bars of soap every month. It was basically about $1.50 I was making on it.
Yeah.
And it just made no sense. Now, if you have to rethink it, now if you package it together and do gift boxes, 3 to 5 packs of soap, now you're killing it. But we ended up really driving all the traffic over to the site where there were subscriptions, which, again, you just have to competitive research, you have to do that to before you do anything. Like if you think you're going to go out and sell $3.99 plastic shoe stretchers and, you know, get $100,000 a month or take out $100,000 a month, no way. You've got to do your research.
And you've also got to think about, so you were talking there about all the different costs associated with obviously launching the product or even just getting the product profitable, right? So you have to pay fees, all the customs fees, all the on cost, it's the fixed costs in the product, right? I mean, of course you can still negotiate on those costs, but these are the core costs. And then you've also got to think about, well, that's one metric, but then what are my advertising costs going to be ongoing? Yeah. And this is very, very important now, I think, on Amazon. Competitively, when you're looking for a product, is how competitive can you be on PPC, for instance, or any advertising platform to be able to get the sale on Amazon as well. So forensically looking at what those costs could be to launch the product and keep consistently selling the product, because if you've got more margin in your products to be able to do that than your competitor, then you're going to outbid them every time to get that spot. You're going to make sure that you get that conversion on that spot as well. And then some people don't really realize this, and it's a bit more of a, I suppose, a strategy rather than understanding that cost up front. But another key thing that we really focus in on is conversion rates. So I always plan for at least a 20% conversion rate, because that in itself, if you've got higher conversion rates, then every piece of traffic that you send to that listing, then you're going to get a better bang for your buck as well, right? So just thinking about all those core elements that you're going to be able to, number one, grow the business with, but is actually going to reduce the cost in your business as you go, and understanding what those, what we call them levers, right? So if you've got, you can imagine all these kind of levers that you can pull, you might not have, you know, you got 10 levers, you might only have 8 or 7 when you launch, but you know you can pull the other 3 once you've launched the product. And that gives you a lot more confidence in terms of the plan that you've put in place as well.
So as thinking as a CEO, so what would be that now that you've got your product up there, you've got your forecast, which is incredibly important. So I look at a forecast or a budget as just a guide.
Yeah.
You know, if you have no guide, if you have no map, how are you ever going to get there? Oh, the other thing is like the channel. So if you're doing some marketing and you have no idea what those costs are, you don't know either. And I'm going to say marketing and sales. Where's your profit? Where's your low-hanging fruit? You might have 72 different cents and there's only 20% doing anything. And out of those 20%, probably 80-20 as well. And, you know, if I marketed them or if I'm going over to social media or if I'm driving them even over to my website, I could be losing a ton of money on marketing and on sales if I don't take a look at breaking down each of the sales channels or marketing channels that I'm doing. You know, sometimes you can just get rid of it. In some cases, I know for one of my products, it's crazy. We just cut PPC and I love PPC. I do a lot of it, but one, it was $20 clicks. I couldn't get around it. Mm. It didn't make any sense. But what made sense was doing the bringing over external traffic through either press releases or going through posts. Post killed it. And I've shared, I don't know if here, I know with my other group that I work with, the mentoring group, but you know where we just killed it on external traffic for that product with posts last year, but took it off of PPC. Hmm. You know, it was, but 99% of my products are probably PPC rebates or some sort of workflow and post and live now. But
So as a CEO, so what I would think about there is, and we see this a lot as well, is we call it shiny object syndrome, right? Mm. So there's so many different strategies that you can do, which is awesome. That's what I love about any of this type of business, especially e-commerce, is that there's really just so much opportunity. So you can't really fail in terms of the opportunities that are out there, right? That's number one. However, where you can fail is thinking that you can do everything all at once without any prior knowledge, right? And so that's where the overwhelm comes in. And we see this a lot. It's kind of either shiny object syndrome, this new thing is the thing that's going to get you where you want to be, the next silver bullet, right? So the next Facebook strategy, the next even our post strategy, the next, you know, YouTube strategy. It's not to say that they don't work, but if you don't have a working model already that's already, you know, firing and have got you to base camp, then trying to do all those different things in, and I see this all the time. We work with people, they've got like lists of, and these are core business strategies that they all want to do in like 3 weeks, right? And I'm like, okay, do you understand the lead times behind what you need to do to achieve and get good at these things, right? So as a CEO, think this way. Do 70% of the stuff that you know works, right? Like bread and butter stuff. 20% of the stuff that someone else has done and they've already got a roadmap for it and they've got results for it and they can prove it time and time again. And then 10% of just winging it and see what happens. And when I say breaking it down like that, 70% is literally your time, your resources, your money. The 20%, same thing, and 10% is like a small budget. You know you've got a bit of time, you've got everything else up and ready, but it's kind of like an idea that you have or a hunch that you've got that you just want to try it. And unfortunately, what tends to happen is people put probably 80% of their time trying to figure that 10% out, and they leave the 70%, and that's when their sales start to do these ones. Because what they're not doing is looking after and caretaking the baby that they've already, you know, started to grow, because they think they need to do everything else. So it's easy. I've done it myself. You know, I've spent a lot of time, a lot of money being distracted. And so if you get focused, and I have a grid, I'll do a quick drawing. But basically it's just trying to plot out all your kind of ideas that you've got, right? That you want to do in your business. And you've got kind of high impact. So this is, my pen's running out, but high impact, low impact. So high impact could be, it's going to give me some great profit in the business. It's going to grow the business. Low impact is, you know what, it's probably not going to do very much. High effort, which is, it's going to take me a lot of time and money, and low effort. Right. You're not going to be able to see this because the pen's rubbish, but it's a grid. Oops. Right. High impact, low impact, high effort, low effort. And you want to plot your projects or your ideas on that grid. Because, and you want to focus as much in the high impact, low effort category, which would be here. Here, right? That's right. Things like working on your listings to get a higher conversion rate. Very high impact in your business, but low effort really, because all you need to do is kind of really think about what are the core benefits of the product, you know, maybe, you know, massaging your images a little bit. As it thinking like a CEO, again, you don't have to do everything. You can outsource a lot of that stuff, right? So for you personally, you're not going to spend a lot of time doing that. It's probably not going to cost you very much, but it could have a very high impact. We worked with a client. They were doing, say, $150,000 a month, but 9% average conversion rate. Just by focusing on that stuff, we doubled his business by literally focusing in on conversion. So that really then starts to help you prioritize the core things that we have as entrepreneurs that are going through our head, that we're basically like, I need to do this, need to do this, need to do this, need to do this. It really helps you focus your efforts and put your money and your time where it needs to be for the highest result.
We have something similar for tasks. So urgent, important. Yeah, it's the same sort of quadrant. But yeah, that's great. And you can see how that works. I mean, it becomes crystal clear. You know, it doesn't muddy the water. This is what I got to work on. So, and maybe what we'll do is we'll throw up a clear image of that, and we'll post it into the Facebook group so people can check it out.
I just wanted to make a point, because I get the kind of important, not important, but what a lot of people believe is important might not be important if it's not actually creating you any money in the business.
Right.
Right. So you could do that exercise, but a lot of people might put, you know, learning how to do YouTube strategies and Facebook strategies and all this stuff, but they haven't yet mastered Amazon, right? Yes, it could be important, but it's not going to have the impact, the biggest impact right now, based on everything else that you know. So that's the kind of thought process that people need to go through, because you could end up spending time and effort on what you think is important, but it's not actually going to deliver back to the business in the quickest way. That makes right. sense.
Yeah, I understand. Yep, 100%. Oh, one last question before we get to the questions. Now you have, you know, basically a CEO is going to be a head coach and cheerleader. When do you start handing off some of that responsibility?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I started 2 weeks into my business because I didn't want to do the customer service, for instance, right? I kind of figured out, I was like, yeah, it's great. I'm getting some good feedback from customers and I want to know what that feedback is. But if I'm just stuck doing that, then I'm not going to be able to figure out the rest of it, right? And so I would say that as soon as you've got your products launched, as soon as you've gone through the launch cycle of one product and you're starting to get some sales in, then I would be thinking about what are the tasks and that important, not important tasks type thing that I'm currently doing that someone else could do, but they could still give me the benefit of those tasks. Customer service is definitely one. Anything to do with, you know, posting on social media and things like that is definitely another task that you can easily outsource. So I would say as soon as you can, outsource a lot of those low impact tasks, but they're still important in the business, and make sure that you still, you know, have a good relationship with the person who's doing that for you in the business so that you actually get the feedback, but you're just not doing the work. So I would say as soon as you can do that, that's awesome. And then I think once you've, you know, launched a couple of products and you're starting to move forward, a next good key hire is probably in about 12 months when you've hit your core income goal, is getting someone in to help you with that, with those other tasks. And I would split this based on what your strengths are in the business, i.e. what's actually going to drive the business forward, as opposed to stuff that you just like doing, right? So you might like writing listings, but if you're just stuck writing listings and not thinking about the future of the business, then is that the best thing for you to be doing? So right. Think about where's your growth going? Your eyes need to be firmly focused on the growth and the strategy, as you were saying, you know, do I want to sell this one day? You know, what core things do I need to start putting in place now? And then outsource the tasks that you can oversee, but someone else is churning through that stuff. So as you get into that kind of rhythm mode of you've got your launch process down, you know how to write your listings, you understand all your metrics and things like that, someone else can oversee that part for you as you look to the growth of the business. And I would say that usually comes between 12 and 18 months in the business.
Okay, very good. So let's get into questions. And before we do that, just a shout out. I saw that Dawin is a first time listener. So thank you for listening, Dawin. All right, Kelsey.
Yes. Yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff to go through. Tons of comments.
Oh, I see Yarrow's back and Laura McCall's here. There's a bunch of people. Victor still. Hey, there's Victor again.
Yeah, Victor. We got John Sims,
Raja. Dr. Kaz. Hey, Dr. Kaz. Mark. Yeah. Lots of people. And Amaria.
All right. So we'll go into a few of the questions. We had some comments about why they started online. So Anna was saying she started because she wanted to start have time with her family. Mark started to diversify and supplement his income with hopes to replace and increase his current business income. Victor's right with you. Old guys unite. So our first question from Dr. Kaz, a regular on the show. What about 99% of people with mortgages, debt, kids, bills? What advice do you have to have a corporate and go solo to break the cycle?
Yeah. So again, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier in terms of your risk profile, right? So for me, I didn't have any of that stuff. I've got that now, but I didn't have any of that stuff then. But what I did was I actually negotiated a redundancy from my my job. And I'd been there for a long time. I'd been there for like 10 years. I knew the growth, where the business was going, where I was working. And so I thought it made sense for them to consolidate a few of the roles so that I could actually leave the business and get a payout. So that's what I did. In terms of if you don't have that option, I would say it's really important to, number one, connect with that why, because that's the key thing that's going to drive you. I would then next say, well, how much money do I actually need? Because, and we've worked with people that are in this situation. Usually what you think you need because you spend that money every month is not necessarily what you actually do need. Now, of course, you need to pay the mortgage, you need to pay the bills and all that other stuff. But there are some sacrifices sometimes that you can make. And even if it's just as simple as, you know, you're not going to spend $200 on that frivolous thing that you would normally buy every month or whatever that is, and just start to build that up and think about what is the core income that I need to be able to pay all those things but still have the free time to grow my business. And for some people, that's going to be, you're going to have a higher risk profile. For others, it's going to be less risk, but just know what that number is and then dedicate the time to the business that's going to get you to that goal. So that's going to be your number one goal, and that's what you're going to build your plan around. But the core point is, it's great also when you've got a job because you have got the money to invest, whereas a lot of people, if they're just out there and they haven't got the money, it's a lot more difficult as well. So I would say, what money do you need to invest in the business to get you to that point? And then also, what time do you need to invest? And then you've got that target to aim for, of that's the income goal that I need to make comfortably. And I would say probably you want to make sure that you're delivering that for a good 6 months in the business first before you then leave your job, because you want to make sure that it's consistent. But I think to just keep doing that, that's pretty much all you're ever going to get to by not taking the leap and jumping into the business. It'd be a nice kind of side business for you, which is, that could be cool as well. But you're not going to grow it much beyond that without being able to really fully focus on it as a business, if that makes sense.
I'd also add to that, make sure that you do have the proper cash flow to get going with it. Because if you're undercapitalized, that could just be, that's a huge part of the risk. So, and on that note, any thoughts on cash flow, what it should be? You know, cost of goods times, I look at it as you got to have at least cost of goods times 3, maybe a bit more to invest in an Amazon product nowadays.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, in terms of your first product, I mean, I like to work with at least $7,000 to $10,000, you know, if that's what you're looking at. But also from an ROI perspective, that's like your return on investment. So for every dollar that you put in, what are you going to get back? So at least 150%, that's what I like to work on. Because, you know, there's no point in getting 75% of that back, right? The more return on investment you can get, then the more cash flow you're going to create. And then also, we like to turn stock every 3 months as well. So rather than having a ton of stock, you know, it's being able to kind of flow that stock through as well.
Right. Okay, Kels, next question.
All right. The next question we have is from Simon. Is it true that 95% of startups fail in the first year? If you do make it, doesn't it take up to 2 to 3 years to go into profit?
I don't know about the stats around that. What I do know about an Amazon specific business is that it doesn't take 2 to 3 years to go into profit. Well, really what it does depend on is your numbers. I mean, if I'm launching a product, I want to be profitable usually within 3 to 6 months, right? I want to be making profit within 3 months. And I want that to be generating a really good turnover, cash flow in 6 months. That's what I like to work on. Now, some people may have massive cash reserves and they're like, I don't want to make a profit in this business because I've got a totally different objective. I want to sell it one day. I don't need to take an income out of it. I'm going to put all my, you know, investment in up front, and I'm going to get all these sales and I'm going to make it profitable at the end so that it looks good for a buyer, right? So that's another thing to think about. But essentially, your question is it true that they fail in the first year? I don't know the answer to that statistic. What I would say is that you will definitely fail if you don't know your numbers. That's what I would say. And you can definitely make profit less than 2 to 3 years if you work on the numbers in the right way.
I agree with getting into profit within about 6 months. On the average, most sellers will technically be into profit the first 3 months, but you're reinvesting into your inventory. So you're taking all your profit and you're reinvesting. And the other thing is, sometimes the worst thing that can happen is to have a huge success. Because if you don't have the proper capital, again, you got to look at your research. But if you don't have the capital, sometimes you just can't afford the inventory. So you could have explosive growth, but you got to pay for the inventory. And then you got to, you could negotiate or come up with some creative financing, but that could hurt a lot. And then you're not getting into the black right away. But I agree with you. It takes about 6 months to start seeing profit that you could probably take out. It's not a short-term play.
No, and I would say that, you know, if you're doing your market research, and there could also be a point where you're like, wow, this is going mega, you know, based on what my forecast was. But at least if you've got that forecast to aim for in the first place, based on real numbers, you've got an idea of what it could cost you. And I think that's the point as well, is you want to be planning that cash flow out for the next 12 months so that you know how much it's going to be. I would say as well, don't treat your business like it's your personal piggy bank, because it's a, respect it. And I mean that because I have done it when in my first years, you know, we dipped into it. It felt like a lifestyle business. It was, great. I've got this cash and then I'm going to like spend all this money. But really think of it as, no, this is a long-term investment that I've got for my lifestyle, and treat it that way. It's not just don't dip in and take out 100 grand because it's there kind of thing. Like you said, you want to grow the business, just take your salary, treat it like that, knowing that you're going to have the bigger sum at the end.
Joe Valley from Quiet Light Brokerage was on, and his, I think what got me motivated was, your biggest payday by far will be the day that you sell. So, you know, if you're taking out huge amounts now and not reinvesting it, you're just taking it away from what your brand or what your business could be when you do sell it. So 80%, I think he came up with a figure of 80% of what you'll make over the lifetime of your brand will be on payday.
Yeah.
And I saw a couple of notes from Victor and Laura that came up, and bang on. So Victor, 6 to 9 months, unrealistic goals. People are listening to too many people that are saying, you know, hey, sitting in front of a Lamborghini flashing cash. It's not that way. This is a business. It's time, it's investment. And if you do it right, if you're thinking this is just to get rich quick, a lot of people are getting into Amazon because it's the next gold rush. No, you got to still do your work. If you go out and get educated and you listen to these types of shows, go and get a course, go and get a good course, get into masterminds, and get to understand, you know, what other Amazon sellers are doing, either on or off Amazon, to drive traffic. That's going to be the thing that's going to, you know, help you out. And all this stuff that Christy's talking to you, this is years of experience. I mean, it's bang on. You got to run your business. And I'm talking too much. Kelsey, next question.
All right. We have one more question. We've had tons of comments as I've been throwing them up on the screen.
Yeah.
But Yaro, do my best to read this one. Name of your, or what's your best of Amazon traffic sources for Amazon listings from your experience?
Yeah, from my experience, PPC, Amazon sponsored ads. That is my always go-to. And the reason I say that is because, and I had this epiphany when I started my business in the first 6 months, because that kind of overwhelm thing that I was talking about earlier, about all these different things that you can do, I was trying to do all those different things. And then I just thought, hang on a minute, because the reason I started the business is because, or the Amazon business, is because people are shopping on Amazon, right? That was the reason. And so I was like, if I just focused on getting the traffic, the shopping, buying traffic that's on Amazon already, if I just put my focus there, then I'll kind of be 80% there, right? You know, it's going to happen at some point. And so that's what I did. I just literally said, I'm going to really understand the relevant buying keywords that my buyer wants to buy. And I'm going to really focus in on understanding Amazon sponsored ads, because that's the closest other thing, right? So number one is the organic traffic, but the PPC enables the organic, and being page one for all my big buying converting keywords. So for me, that's exactly what I did. I've tried other traffic sources. I'm not the best tech person in the world. I like things easy and simple. And so that's what I do, unless there's a big hurdle, as you suggested, Norm, where either you can't run PPC for whatever reason. And so that forces you then to go out and find something else. But I'm a big believer in, as I said, you know, high impact, low effort, low hanging fruit. Get that really massively humming where it's just a system. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You're just tweaking a few things. And then I would look at other traffic sources after that.
Yeah. One other thing, and this just helps with PPC, and there's lots of different ways to drive external traffic, but if you can create a Facebook campaign, you create, you know, a variety of different audiences, and I'm not going to get into Facebook training right now, but if you could drive these people either to a landing page, make it hard for them to sell, just like on Amazon Post. If you notice on Amazon Post, it takes 4 or 5 clicks. And what they're doing is they're getting rid of the tire clicker or click kickers, getting rid of the tire kickers. So when they do click on your listing, they're motivated to buy. What does that do? It increases your conversion rate. Same thing if you're driving traffic over to, let's say it's going from Facebook over to a landing page, you're getting those people to give your email or do something, and they really don't want to do it. The ones that want to buy are going to do it. And then they come over to your Amazon listing, your conversion rate increases, and guess what? Your PPC costs drop. So it kind of works hand in hand. Now, I did see another question here from John Sims.
John Sims, I believe that was a comment. Let me find it.
Sure.
All right. I started selling online because I had the feeling that there was something more for me to do. This path will provide the freedom to grow and mature in more ways than I ever would punching a clock. For me, it's about holistic development.
Right.
And then I'll go through a couple. Okay. Raja is saying it's awesome. Thank you, Raja. Let me see. Yaro, I dream to survive 2020. What 5 years are you talking about? And I got a couple comments from Victor. Look at how many entrepreneurs go on Shark Tank with 1 million in top line and virtually no profit after years in business.
Yeah. And what do they say, right? They're like, I'm not investing.
And then our first time viewer, Darwin. In 5 years, I'd like to have sold my first brand and be halfway to my MG second. 10 years, I would like to be a part of some type of business that helps people with product research and development. And he goes on to say, I'm finding that right now. I was out of stock for 6 months in 2020. I'm finally crawling out. And another good person I heard speak about selling online brands is Sal Vassallo. I heard him on Carlos Alvarez podcast. He motivated me for sure.
Oh, we got to check out Sal.
Yeah. And we haven't released this yet, but we do have Carlos Alvarez coming on the show in the next couple of weeks, so you guys can look out for that too. Victor is saying elves are mythical creatures, easy, lucrative, and fun. And
what about gnomes?
And Simon, every business owner must read or listen to audiobook The E-Myth.
Oh my God.
Norm talks about all the
time. Michael Gerber changed my life. And that was back when The E-Myth was first put out. We had a company that was experiencing, it's not even hyper growth. I mean, it's hyper growth. And we were losing it and talking about sleepless nights. But it told me and showed me how to systemize everything. So I joined the E-Myth Academy, which is beyond the book, and it just broke down everything, how we could create processes and procedures. And we do it today, everything that we do. In fact, I think I told you, Christy, like in the office, I don't have, everything's virtual, but when I had my office, we had a 5-page SOP, policy and procedure, with the SOP built into it on how to make a cup of coffee. A good cup of coffee.
Yeah, especially if you want barista coffee, right?
This was just plain old wood chip coffee, you know? Yeah. But you know, what's interesting about that, that simple process, people were going, why am I doing this? I mean, why do I have to, you know, learn this stupid process? Well, first of all, if you can't follow a process on how to make a cup of coffee, can you follow a complicated process? And then the other thing was, we found out that we had like tons of traffic coming into the office, and we'd have board meetings, and we'd have all, but burnt coffee, no coffee. So we wanted to make sure, and we got everybody to buy into it. We wanted people, when they came in the morning, that they could grab a cup of coffee. When we had a board meeting, people could have a cup of coffee. Clients come in, they could have a cup of coffee or whatever they wanted. The end of the day, you know, who was to make the coffee? It came down to five pages. Where do you find the coffee? When do you reorder? And what that taught me is that you have to break things down into minute steps. And, you know, if number or step 20 breaks, then you could go directly to step 20. But that's how we do it with all our VAs. And, you know, with our Amazon products right now, like we have 400 policies and procedures in place for Amazon.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And just being able to systemize that. And then it's a lot easier then, isn't it, to hire people and put them into the system pretty much straight away.
Yep.
And the one thing I would just say on hiring is, you know, obviously get the right people, but nurture the people as well in the business, you know, regardless of what they're doing in the business. You know, treat them like they are a valued member of the team, even if they're working for you for a couple of hours a week, and show them the vision of the business. So as Darwin said there, you know, I want to be doing this in five, I want to sell the business in 5 years, and I want you to be part of the team that helps us do this. You might think, yeah, but they're only doing customer service, but they're going to help. You're going to be able to give them an SOP that gives them the best world customer service, because you want to be able to build this awesome business that you want to sell one day. And everybody, once they buy into that vision, you'd be surprised how much dedication, how much extra mile that people will go in the business and stay with you in the business as well. Because it's okay to hire someone, but to rehire for a position, it actually takes you a lot of time and effort and money out of the business as well, right?
Right. Yeah, and it's another point is, if you're the only person buying in to the performance-based culture or the company culture, it doesn't go very far. It's just you dictating. All right, so we're coming into December. We're well into the fourth quarter. What can people do for Black Friday and the holiday sales going forward? Any thoughts?
Right now. Yeah, right now. I would definitely check my listings. Are they, how are they converting at this point? Can I get any more conversion out of it? And just being able to look back at the keywords. Another good tip is, if you've got brand analytics, you can go back and see what kind of keywords were really ranking well in 2019 and see how they're starting coming up in the ranks right now, right? And so you can get some of those buy-in keywords into your listings and into your ads and things like that. Really start to hone in on the keywords that make you the most money in that season as well. As you were saying, maybe some of those keywords are too expensive usually, but you know what? You might invest in them at Christmas because it's going to give you a bigger bang for your buck, right? So those are the two key things I always do is refocus at this point, because it's like next week, like Black Friday is next week. So focus in on your listings, relook at the keywords, which are the ones that are the most converting, and make sure that you invest in those, so that you get the most of the majority of that traffic. And another key thing I would do is, rather than thinking about dropping your price, think about how can you profit max in this season, because the buyers are going to be a bit different to your normal buyers. They're going to be looking for that difference between value and quality. And if you're kind of on the low side on your pricing, for instance, then maybe they're going to rethink a little bit about buying that for someone else. And that's something that I usually can cash in on a little bit every Christmas, is that kind of profit maxing piece on your price, rather than going down, go up.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. And the other thing, if you have a recurring product, soap, don't be afraid to spend 100%. Like, whatever the cost is of that soap, and let's say it's $10, I don't mind spending $10 and losing $10. It's not a loss. What happens is if, and this is a big if you've got a good or a high quality product with high perceived value, and they get that product, well, what are they going to do 30 days from now? They're going to come back and buy your brand and buy your brand. So our cost of acquisition is the cost of the product, if and only if it's a recurring revenue stream.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's it. You got off. See, no panic. I didn't have a panic attack anyways talking about this. But all right, so we do have a bit of a giveaway. And do you want to tell everybody what it is?
Yeah, sure. So the giveaway is, I don't know what we're going to ask or what the question is going to be, but the giveaway will be you will get a 30-minute consult with me on your business. So whatever stage you're at in your business, I might ask you to just give me a bit of your metrics, or if you're brand new to the business, I can talk you through how to get started properly.
Oh, and I think we should add, if you've won maybe like in the last week or two, let someone else.
we'll do that because, we've been giving away a few things, but let's say a virgin winner. Okay.
A virgin winner.
So here's what you have to do is you just have to put.
Ooh, I have a question.
Yep. Okay. Go ahead.
I mean, we can ask a question from the podcast to see who's been watching.
Oh, that's good.
So I have one. I think it's accurate.
I hope so.
It's your Norm's favorite book that he talks about all the time. Does that make sense?
That is. So if you know my favorite book, or at least the one I talked about today, put in and you'll be the winner of Kirsty's 30-minute call. Let's see. Oh, hey, Brian Bowman's on too. Haven't seen you in a long time.
All right. So, we can close out the show and I'll keep an eye on the comments. So, yeah, okay. If you know Norman Farrar's favorite book, his entrepreneurial book, you'll win.
Which was just talked about. Ooh. Oh, there he is. Okay.
Victor
grabbed it. Okay, perfect. Now, you do know that Victor is a seasoned entrepreneur and he's going to tap you for sharing that 30-minute call. But anyway, Kirsty, thank you so much for, being on. I know what you're doing over at Real. I know you and Isaac have a great program. So if anybody's interested, check out your program. We haven't even talked about the contact information. Why don't we give your contact information and talk a little bit about your program?
Yeah, so we have a coaching program, and it's not just, it's not a course. So we literally work with you. We've also got coaches within the business as well. So we work with you one-to-one on every aspect of your business, really focusing in on the numbers, which is what I talked a lot about today. So the numbers, the forecasts, the planning, as well as, of course, how to execute all that stuff, right? So I noticed that someone said earlier, yeah, I get a buzz about out of the action. Action is key. It definitely is key. But also you want to plan it first and then execute excellently. So that's what we really focus on, about building a real business, not just launching some stuff on Amazon and hoping for the best. So that's what we really focus on. You can get us at www.goteamreal.com. We have some free training on there as well. Or you can email me at kirsty@goteamreal.com. And my name is K-I-R-S-T-Y, not Kirsty.
Which I've probably said about 10 times. But I have said Kirsty.
Just for email addresses, you just have that distinction.
No. I caught myself starting to say that a few times during the podcast. But anyway, hey, look, you've been great. I hope you join our group, by the way, the group that we've put together, Kelsey's put together. And I've been forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend and Black Friday and Thanksgiving and all that stuff.
And enjoy Montreal. Have some smoked meat for me.
I will.
Okay, everybody. So thank you for watching the show today. It was great. It looks like our community, well, we know our community is growing, and, you know, we love having you. If Kelsey's going to be talking about the Facebook group, but if you haven't been over there, check it out. There's lots going on. Check out our newsletter. Go to Lunch with Norm or normferrar.com, and you can subscribe to the newsletter. I promise it doesn't suck. We've got tons of content that's going there. You're not seeing tons of ads. It's content, video. There's articles. It comes out every Monday. And Kelsey, where are you?
Oh, great show, as always. That's awesome.
Kirsten was awesome.
Yes. I went ahead and added this in here. This is the Facebook name group. If you've haven't already, please like the episode, share it to your friends, find anyone, if you know anyone that's interested in Amazon and online selling, let us know or tag them in the comments, and we'd love to know. We are an official podcast, so you can find us on Lunch with Norm and Spotify, Apple, anywhere you find your podcast, you can find us. And thank you, everyone. We had so much engagement today. It's been growing every episode, I think. And I hope everyone is having a great weekend. Happy Friday. And yeah, that's it for me.
Okay. Well, we can't forget about Monday. So Monday's episode, we're going to have a treat. Dr. Travis Ziegler is going to be coming. He's a recovering optometrist turned e-commerce entrepreneur. And we're going to be discussing how to build raving fans. It's going to be great. So if you get a chance, not if you get a chance, on Monday, join us live Eastern Standard Time at noon. And also check out Monday and Fridays. Sorry, you know what? I knew I'd blow this. At the end of the bloody podcast, I blow it. How about we do this again? Join us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday live at noon Eastern Standard Time. There we go. Hopefully, Kelsey, you can cut that out of the recorded version.
I'm keeping that in for sure.
Yeah. You know, I have to flub things up at least once an episode. Okay, so I think that's it. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day. If you do have questions about our topic today, throw them in the comments section, and we will do our very best to get back to you. 100, 100, 100.